A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Glamour Hey It's Okay, your weekly insight into all the things I've got the Glamour office hot and bothered under the collar this week. I'm James Williams, Deputy Editor, and as ever I'm ably assisted this week by a member of the Glamour team, the lovely Kat Brown, our social media editor. Hello,
hello.
Kat. Hi, how are you?
I'm exceptionally excited, I can't possibly think why.
I hear you. We are very excited because quite frankly we're joined by a VVVIP this week. We are both so excited. Well, for me anyway, I'm going to fanboy embarrassingly for the next half an hour because this lady's quite frankly the Dalai Lama of domesticity. You know, she's my Maya Angelou of cooking. She's taught me pretty much everything I know about cooking. It's the fabulous Nigella Lawson.
Hey, thank you. Does your mother know you said that?
Yeah, I need to say actually that a prerequisite, my mum taught me a lot and then she kind of handed over, which gave me your first ever cookbook. Well, not your first one, Nigella Bites, when I left for university, and it's been one of my bibles ever since.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
Yes, that taught us all, I think.
But you must, I feel like you have, from a cooking perspective, quite rabid, avid fans. I mean, I know that from lots of my friends feel the same way that we do. Do you get like quite amazing reactions from people out and about?
I do, and I love it. And I have to say, because I'm obsessed with food and I'm a very nosy person, I love meeting people who've cooked my recipes and I want to know who they've cooked them for and what they've cooked when and what else they've cooked it with. And I think in a way that's why food is interesting, because it is always a conversation. But I do love that. And one of the things I've really enjoyed, and you know, people always talk about social media as something that makes us quite unconnected and disconnected. But actually for me, when I see that people have been posting pictures of my food and I see something which started off, you know, in a way, you know, from my kitchen, from my table and on someone else's table, and seeing that food become part of someone else's life as well, I find that very moving, and it's a very deep connection. I love that.
Well, you're so natural on Instagram in particular, because I know lots of places sort of farm out their social media to other people, but it always feels like it's you, isn't it?
It's always me, which is why Recipe of the Day is often not till 5 in the afternoon, because I've forgotten it. But why would I want to farm that out? Because I love that.
Yeah.
And I think that it's not worth doing if it's inauthentic, then why bother?
Yeah.
You know, I feel.
Were you quite an early adopter of the whole social media thing?
No, I wasn't. I was late to Twitter because I felt, you know, it would be dangerous for me. And frankly, my whole life is like, you know, one long Twitter feed, because I talk out loud. You know, when I do my programmes, you know, and I'm talking and I'm chatting, that isn't just for the camera. I'm like that normally. I give a running commentary on everything I do.
Even if it's just you at home, on your own.
And so I'm always doing that. So I thought, well, I don't need Twitter because that's how I live. And I also thought it's quite dangerous because you can start saying everything you think. But so then I felt I had to do it, but I do limit it, not just to food. You know, if it's sometimes like a big event like Eurovision or you know, football, big championship, and sometimes I do other things and I retweet other people as well. But basically, I sort of stick to food. And Instagram, I thought I wasn't really me because I'm a words person, not a pictures person. But actually, it suits me a lot because I've always photographed absolutely everything I've eaten forever. I mean, in the days when you had to take your film to, you know, the chemist and they would develop it, even then I was taking pictures
and
of
isn't
what
it, I was going to say, isn't it true that your holiday snaps are mainly of food rather than your children?
Always. Maybe one or two of the children. You know, I'm not that bad. Maybe one. 99 of, you know, Tuscan tomato stalls.
But it all comes together as a really nice diary, doesn't it? Yes. Particularly on Instagram, well, that's changed. But it must be really useful for almost keeping a scrapbook of things that you're interested in and fancies.
But I was talking this when to some friends saying, I remember when Instagram did first launch and it was very much just a visual thing, you know. But now I feel the balance has very much shifted. And I now feel really annoyed and shortchanged if somebody puts up a picture with no context. I want the words. It needs the caption or it needs a little bit of...
But you can do a very short caption.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about Instagram, I mean, I do eat an awful lot of the same things. So sometimes I feel, I mean, even on Twitter, I remember once someone said, you're what mother hens warn their chicks of, you know, because every day, you know, some sort of chicken being on my Twitter feed or something. But I do feel largely that it is, as you say, it's a diary and it's a very good way of sharing your enthusiasms or something. I mean, I always try and do things that I find uplifting because I think it can be a plate of food, it can be a view, and I like that. I think Instagram, on the whole, is quite a positive place.
Yes, and also being able to tag your pictures or tag one's cook pictures to you directly is almost like taking a tribute to the chef and going, I've made this, madam.
Like that.
Could
and
you look at this?
And I do, and I like seeing that. And it means I can see what people have cooked. And that is such an important and moving connection for me. I really love it. And in the same way as when I do book signings and people come up and say, oh, I cook this every Christmas, or this is how I, you know, this is what I do for every, all my children's birthdays. It's, there's something really touching sounds too sentimental. I think it means that there's a real connection there, and that's in a way what is so important in life.
I mean, you touched on that. You have kind of become synonymous with Christmas for many people as well. I mean, it's coming up to that time of year. Are you daring to feel festive yet, Nigella?
Well, I have filmed part of my Christmas special, so that's always slightly disconcerting when I forget, and then, you know, October starts saying Happy Christmas for everyone because I've been living in, you know, a world of, you know,
tinsel
red,
and fairy
shiny
lights.
I'm always living in a world of fairy lights. I have them at home all year round.
They're not just for Christmas.
No, certainly not. But I do. But I feel that you can really go overboard at Christmas. So I'm gearing myself up.
Yeah.
I'm gearing myself up very pleasantly.
But before we get to Christmas, we have to talk. Obviously, you are back with a new book and a new TV show at my table. Tell us a little bit about both.
Well, it's, what can I tell you? It's more of me. I mean, I always feel when people say, what's new? I always say, well, I'm never going to be a different sort of person. But I suppose what I really wanted to do is talk about the sort of food that I've eaten throughout my life and how when you cook, I'm a home cook. I mean, it is sort of subtitled A Celebration of Home Cooking. And a home cook, in fact, is often misinterpreted sort of publicly. People think, oh, home cooking, quite boring, quite a limited repertoire. But actually, what happens is you have certain things you've eaten in your life, but then you come across some new ingredient and you start using that. So you cook familiar food, but maybe you bring different ingredients to it. And for me, that's very reassuring. So in a way, it's a way of, you bring the past, but you're very much in the present as well.
I mean,
and so it's that sort of food. It's cozy food, but it's not heavy particularly. You know, sort of, it's the sort of food that I just have on my table and feel that makes me feel I'm at home.
I think, having looked at the book and actually cooked from the book, it is. It's very reassuring because I think what you've said is really true. It's not about reinventing the wheel. And I think sometimes people overcomplicate cooking in their heads, or they think, I think they've maybe had their fingers burnt by maybe using chef's books. And so it's been a bit too much. They've leapt in too deep, if you know what I mean. So I think this is actually really a great book for people who think they can't cook. Because I very much disagree that people think they can't cook. I think people just had bad experiences.
I do, and I think they misunderstand. Whose phone is that?
Oh, dear. Tsk, tsk.
It's yours.
Oh, no, is it me? That's so bad. I was telling... Sorry about that, everyone.
But I think people misunderstand what cooking is. They think cooking is about fiddly technique. I've got no technique whatsoever. For me, cooking is about flavour. And you don't need to have, you know, a skill set to boast about, which I certainly don't, in order to cook wonderful food. Now, and obviously, I think we're still living in this age, I don't know why, this hangover from when the only real cooking was thought to be French classic cuisine, which is all about, which not all about technique, of course it's about more than that, but technique is a very important part of it. And you don't need to know how to do difficult things. I mean, I'm a cook, not a chef. I can't bone a fish. My carving is not brilliant. Yeah. My knife skills are non-existent. But that doesn't mean to say I can't make food that tastes good. Mm. And who's got time as well to do something which means you've got to be, chiseling a carrot into the shape of a chrysanthemum?
Yeah. Although that would be an amazing thing. I would be highly on board to learn that. And you're right. There's this sort of still this creeping insistence that cooking has to be alchemy rather than building blocks. And I certainly think that one of the hugest things that you've done for people like me and James and everybody else who's cooked with your books over the years has made it into that if you do 1 + 2, you'll probably get 3, unless you've really cocked up along the way.
But in a way, when you say alchemy, that's why I think baking is so wonderful. Because baking, I always say about baking that it's a cross between chemistry and poetry. Mm. And I think that when you cook a stew, which I do quite often, you have some idea that, that the leeks and the carrots and the beef and the bit of red wine, you have some idea of what it's going to taste like from the raw ingredients. But there is something so transformative about baking that somehow that the butter and sugar and flour and eggs turn into something that is so different and so magical. And I think we all as human beings do have a bit that dream of transformation. And that's why I think when I wrote my baking book, Domestic Goddess in something like 1820, it was, people thought you can't do a baking book. No one did baking.
Which is crazy now. You look at Bake Off how it's become.
But I really felt, it speaks to us in quite an important way for that very reason.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it is so popular.
And it's also, I think, as you say, in this book, baking is more of a science. So you need to be a bit more exact, whereas you can be a bit more free of hand, I guess.
You need to be exact. But then when you've done it, you can't go, I think I'll do 3 eggs this week. Mm. Whereas obviously you can add another carrot or leek or something when you're making something else. But you learn. The thing is, the more you do of something, the more confident you get. People want to be super confident. But without putting, you just have to get competent first. Competent is not glamorous, but it is very important. And then you learn that you can put a bit of vanilla in it, but you don't want vanilla. You can put almond. You can fiddle with flavors always.
Yeah.
But my sort of cookie, what I think is you've got to give people quite precise building blocks, but also remind everyone that they can ignore them.
Yeah. And also
not ignore everything, but to alter taste. You've got to take, when I watch those cooking, reality shows, and people don't taste as they cook. Madness.
Yeah, no, true. But also, I think what you do really well, Nigella, and especially in this book, I think, is you also give anecdotes. So even if you look at the recipe, I'll say that I was flicking through the book and I was thinking, I'm not sure I fancy that. And then I read your description or the context with which you came up with the idea, and then that's what sells it to me. And I think you're really great at doing that.
Everything's a story in life, isn't it? And I feel for me, food can't be just a formula. It is a story and why it matters to me in my life and what it means.
Mm. Yeah. Well, do check out the book. It's called At My Table, and the new TV show is on Mondays, BBC Two at 8:30. But right now, Nigella, we're getting on to real business now. We're going to start talking about some real sort of burning issues of the day and the week. Are you ready? Okay,
yes.
Let's get in. Up first, the most burning issue of the day, and very much, I think, on brand for you, Nigella. Is it okay to be stuck in a food rut? And when I say that, I mean, is it okay to basically eat or prepare the same thing again and again and again? Where do we stand on this?
I'm standing very quietly.
Okay.
Because having literally just been talking about stew, I was just like, well, that's what I'm making pretty much for the next 6 months until spring emerges. I love cooking. I really do. But I find that if I'm really making an effort with cooking, I suppose, as we were talking about before, then it's normally for a dinner party or something else. And so the rest of the time, I use it almost as like something to unwind with at the end of the day. And that for me is stew. I shove like what I call a cooking film on Netflix. So something really soothing like Julie and Julia or Disney's Enchanted. And then just spend the next sort of hour and a half, 2 hours just simmering things, adding more things, possibly. And it could be a risotto. It could be, something with beef. It could be something vegetarian. But it's always got that cooking pot. And it's always just me having a lovely time in the kitchen and feeling my shoulders drop.
But I think, the thing about, is it okay? Mm. I think that, in a way, anything is okay if you feel happy about it. We're all different. And I think this thing of everyone feeling they're being judged in some way or judging themselves, I think it's perfectly normal to have to rely on the same few dishes. We all do. I mean, my family are always teasing me that I'm about to roast a chicken. And, you know, I make, you know, or I make, you know, I make a lot of soups. And so I'm always, you know, I've been doing a lot of bean and barley soups recently. And I think that's absolutely normal. When it's not okay is if it makes one feel bored. You know, if I suddenly feel like, ugh, I'm doing it on automatic. I'm not sort of being there. So I think that's why I think sort of cooking in a sort of normal way liberates you from that, because in the end, I have to use up what's in my fridge. So I may be, in a sense, like you say, cooking the stew, a risotto, a soup, but each time I do it, I'm going to be doing it slightly differently because I've got different vegetables to use up, or for some, you know, different... You know, I've got a teeny bit of white wine or a teeny bit of red wine or whatever yeah. it might be, leftovers. I start from leftovers often. So that means, yes, you know, I am cooking very much the same sorts of things. I mean, in a way, we all tend to have certain styles of cooking. Some people like doing things on the hob. Some people are more sort of shove it in the oven. And but I think you vary it a bit. I think what doesn't often work is when you think I'm going to do something different for its own sake, and then you, that's not right. But I certainly think that, you know, you have to cook in the way that sort of suits your life.
Yeah, I kind of hear you. Do you think something like the advent of like online grocery shopping has, because I think what happens is people tend to just repeat order, don't they? So they're not really then pushing themselves in terms of, you know, maybe mixing up their actual raw ingredients. So they don't. Yes. So they always have the same basic supply.
I think what really makes a difference, and I did while, is being forced into being creative. So like a vegetable box, because otherwise you do tend to buy the same.
Yeah.
And then you actually have to use them, and it makes you think in a slightly different way. So I think that can be very useful way of shaking things up, but I think you're probably the framework, or if you like, the skeleton of how you cook is always going to be a bit the same. And if you do a new recipe, you need a while for that new recipe to become part of the way you cook. You can't, you know, keep chalking up that new recipe, that another one. And I think that's why all of us, when we buy a new cookery book, we often do a recipe and then we like it and we do it again and again before we move on to another
one. Yeah. I mean, I think as well, you know, I totally agree with you. We play to our strengths, or you ultimately, you know, especially a lot of the time it's about simplicity. You haven't got that much time. So, but I guess when I go out to eat, I will then always try to push myself.
Yeah.
Like I always say to myself, when I'm looking at a menu in a restaurant, I'll say, can I make that at home? And if I can, I would never order it, because I think, what's the point?
Yeah.
And I get quite irate with some of my friends if we go out to a restaurant and they order pea and mint soup. Because I'm like, that's literally some stock, a bag of frozen peas and some mint.
Yes.
You could do that. You're not going to spend £6 on it. And, you know.
Yes.
So I get a bit annoyed with people when they sort of do that. Am I awful for saying that?
No, but you're not awful for saying
that. I just think that's your opportunity to really then broaden your horizon slightly, you
know?
You're
right, but I also think doing that at home is in a way, it's like a safe place to do something slightly different. And for me as well, I quite like it when there's something I'm frightened of cooking and I overcome that fear.
Really? Yes.
You know, because I think sometimes, as I said, we all tend to cook in the same sort of way, and that can be very relaxing, but it can be confining. So sometimes you need to just try something, and at home, you know what? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you've tried it, and then
it can
be
really eye-opening. Yeah.
You know, like my poached egg.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. My fear of poaching eggs, which I've always had.
Oh, please expand.
For those of you
who
don't know yet, Nigella has devised a new way of poaching eggs.
Well, I don't know that it's my way. I've taken lots of different bits from other people's methods.
And so it's a revelation. Tell us about it. Yeah.
Well, it is, because I have always, you know, if I ever read a recipe that said, you know, to poach egg, I would start feeling a bit flustered and turn the page very, very fast.
Clammy hands.
Yes, I can't do that. And in fact, because I couldn't poach an egg, I always would just, and I've got asbestos hands, I would soft boil an egg and peel it and do that instead.
Yeah.
But then I thought, no, I'm going to learn. I tried lots of different ways, and I went through a thing of, you know, creating a vortex, mostly so I could say create a vortex. but that didn't seem to work, and you can only do one egg at a time then. So I think key is the water shouldn't be boiling. It should be nearly boiling, but not, but, you know, calm. And then I feel that, so a French person said to me, the thing about poaching an egg, it's about how fresh the egg is. And if it's not 2 days from being laid, the egg starts going watery. The white goes watery. So you have to put it in a strainer and get the watery bit out. Mm. I don't do that every day. I only do it when I want something
Instagram pretty.
Nice. Well, no, not even Instagram, but say if I'm doing my Turkish eggs or something, yeah, then I want to. But if I'm just, I don't mind a bit of straggle on my, on a bit of toast in the morning. But I think, so I think that, so I think the egg has to be cold from the fridge. I don't normally keep eggs in the fridge, but I keep some for poaching because it holds its shape more. Mm. Oh. If it's in water, if I'm poaching it in a, like a curry, then I would have it room temperature, but that's a, you know, different story. Mm. Then I crack it after, I either sieve it if I want it to have no straggle and fluff, or I put it in a cup and I put lemon juice, which I prefer than vinegar, or if I, you know, if I'm in, on the run, I can put vinegar straight on the white, so I don't put it in the water, which makes the egg taste disgusting. Ooh. And doesn't work. So this makes the white seem to sort of suddenly get hold itself even more and to keep its shape. And then never put salt in the water. And then I put the egg in very, very slow, you know, almost, you can't see, no movement at all, just for about 3 to 4 minutes, about 4 minutes, and then it is perfect. And if you want to help it with a slotted spoon, you can make it curl itself over. But anyway, it is perfect. But because the water is so low, I have so many times kept the flame on, the water, because I've forgotten it's on. So I, when I wrote the recipe in the book, I had to say, remember to turn the flame off.
I saw that note, and again, it was like you crawled inside my head, because I do that a lot. Yeah. It's, and it's actually got, and if you live on your own, it's actually not a good thing to do, yeah, is it? It's like, you know, but
anyway, that's been life changing for me. It's these small things, you know.
And let's be honest, everyone, if you're talking, if you're going to be stuck in a food rut, be stuck in a poached egg rut, because they always are delicious and amazing. So in that case, embrace your food rut and cook things again and again.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right then, ladies. So sticking with our food themes, after all, we do have domestic goddess Nigella Lawson with us. So up next, is it okay?
I prefer Dalai Lama.
Oh, sorry. I know. You've officially been rebranded as the Dalai Lama of domestic. I should trademark that.
I have to say, I'm not very domestic. I like cooking, but, my ironing, you don't want to be looking at that. I just don't iron. I'm short-sighted, so I can't see the creases.
Well, my theory is if you hang most things straight away, you don't have to iron them. I'm a big believer in that.
I don't own an iron anymore. Oh. I have a steamer, but that's it. Also, I feel like I can't. Yeah.
I changed my entire wardrobe to things that don't require ironing, and my life is a million times happier.
Life's too short to spend your life sweating over an ironing board, isn't it? So anyway, we digress.
That's completely unlike us.
So unlike us on this, but we never digress on hate, okay? Anyway, ladies, up next, is it okay to have a slight pathological hatred of fussy eaters? Nigella, where do you stand on this?
You know what? I used to get, shall we say, irritable. Mm. Now I'm quite grateful because actually it's made me cook differently. I feel that I've come up with recipes I would never have cooked if I hadn't had to. You know, if someone comes for dinner and they can't have gluten, I'm not going to do a cake with gluten in it. Whereas normally, I can eat as much gluten as you want to throw at me. Mm. But so in a way, I find it quite helpful. What I don't like is when people expect you to cater for whatever, you know, fad diet they're on at one time. Once I did have someone who wouldn't eat carbs, someone who would only eat carbs, someone, you know, went on like that. And I just thought, like, what can I do? There's nothing I can cook.
In the Venn diagram, there was no crossover.
Very few things. But generally speaking, I think... the word fussy eater is in a way a problematic one. If you say that certain people have restricted diets, my own position is that unless you need to have a restricted diet for a medical reason, I often think it can be problematic. Nevertheless, I want my friends to feel welcome in my house, so I will cater to whatever they can or can't eat. And I like that. So, for example, I now find... I'm quite interested in vegan cookery because I quite often cook for people who don't eat meat, and that seems to me perfectly reasonable, you know, in fact, more than reasonable. And it makes me think about food in a different way because you get used to thinking, oh, I have that, and then I have that on the side. And that, so actually, I feel it's really opened my mind and made me look at different ingredients and how to get texture, because it's that variety of texture that is the real challenge in cooking when you have a restricted diet, I think. So I find it quite interesting. And so I've got... But as a matter of course now, I quite enjoy the challenge of, right, I'm going to do that and I'm not going to have any wheat in that, or I'm going to do that's going to have no meat, and how am I going to get that flavour? So for me, I do quite enjoy it. And also, if someone comes to me for supper, if I've got 8 meat eaters, or, you know, 7 meat eaters and 1 vegetarian, I will do a vegetarian supper, because I think it's very important that everyone enjoy and eats and shares the same food. So I do find it quite exciting.
Yeah. And the golden rule is, of course, they have to be upfront in advance.
Yes.
Because, I mean, has that happened to you where you've had someone come to dinner and then they suddenly present, oh, I don't eat blah, blah, blah?
Well, that is quite difficult. And I did have someone once email me saying, and I, you know, about a day or two before, and I had, you know, got the food, saying, oh, I don't eat red meat. And I thought, do you know what? I don't need to know that, because that is just, that goes beyond, vegetarian, I understand, if someone has a medical thing, but just someone who don't eat red meat, well, then just don't eat any, just meat. Don't eat any meat.
Yes, yeah, I'm with you
I
on
think that.
That
was, that goes,
that's a foible.
That was, and then she didn't turn up.
Oh my God.
That's even worse.
Oh, she sounds awful.
And I changed my everything.
We don't like her. We don't.
Well, she's not been back.
I find it fascinating when people are like, oh no, I don't eat red meat, as though that's the cure of everything. Because my first job after graduating with a modern languages degree was working in a meatpacking factory. And In several languages, indeed. Le poulet et dégoûtant, you see. But it was just mind-blowing. And I haven't touched supermarket ham or sliced anything from there since. And I really try just to get stuff that is from somewhere decent. But vegan food, conversely, and I'm not vegan, I'm a very enthusiastic meat eater, has improved so much.
Yes, they don't,
even
like,
in the
they
last 10 years.
It's not called vegan anymore, it's called plant-based.
Plant-based,
oh,
isn't it?
Plant-based
yeah.
eating. So
but it's,
but
it, yeah, it is, yeah. And it's very interesting. I mean, I love it, actually. I mean, I do a lot. It surprised me. When I did the index to the book, we do blobs. I don't think it's the right thing to say, whether it's gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan, vegetarian. And it's like doing bingo. You have to go through it. And it surprised me how many recipes were vegetarian and vegan. And something like, just in savoury, it's like 55 or something, or 35.
I totally agree.
So you just do it without thinking, in the normal run of things.
Yeah.
So I'm quite happy about doing all that. I mean, I think... No, I think it's interesting.
I mean, I think I'm with you in the sense that, yeah, be a vegan, be a vegetarian. You know, I mean, even pescatarians I can kind of get my head around. But yeah, like I said, fussy eaters, I think, makes you feel like you're putting everyone in the same box. And that's not true. I'm totally with you. I guess my thing is, in my head, when I think of a fussy eater, you always think of a small child, don't you? You think people, kids who just don't want to look, or they don't like the taste of it. And I say that as a reformed, very fussy child eater who now suddenly eats everything. Yeah. But, there are some, even adults, still have that weird thing that if it doesn't look like how they expect it to look, they won't try it.
I think you've got to be very relaxed and not make people eat anything when they come. I don't mind when people say they don't want to eat pudding. That doesn't bother me at all. I think what I don't like, how can I say this without sounding too contentious? Some people really just don't want to eat for a variety of unhealthy reasons. And instead of just being clear about that, they say they can't eat this and they can't eat that. So what I don't want to do is make my menu suit them, and then they're just pushing it around on a plate because they're trying not to eat.
Anyway, yeah.
That's problematic. And I can't tell you how many people as well, it makes me laugh, who say, like, oh, I don't want to have any pudding, no dessert for me. I say, fine. And they're the ones who are sitting at the table when everyone else has finished. We've all had a slice of cake, and they've got a knife, and they do one thin slice, and then another thin slice, and they eat the whole cake.
Exactly, yeah. It's true. No, it's a funny thing, yeah. But, I mean, I have to say, there are some foods that I wish I could like, and
tell
I feel
me.
Honestly, I do eat most things, but the one thing I can't, I actually feel really like bad for not being able to get my head around them, is I can't eat oysters. I just can't handle it. I think it's a texture thing,
yes,
but also
yeah.
People tell me then, oh, you know, they tasted the ocean, or you swallow them whole, and I'm like, well, what's the point then? I don't quite understand. So it does bother me because I feel it.
I don't think you should be bothered by that. I really don't. I mean, I think that. The things you should never say to people are, you should eat that or you should read that,
yeah.
In terms of it's good for you. You know, it's about pleasure. And if it doesn't give you pleasure, well, what's the point?
I can't help but think that that's my one childish rebellion. I think I probably should try and go back to trying oysters again, but I had such a bad experience when I tried to eat it that one time as a teenager.
Yeah.
But I think Kat and I have to share this thing. I think people are a bit scared of fish generally. Mm. You know, I mean, I don't buy a lot of fish, which is why when I go out, for example, I will then often push myself to order a fish option.
Fish.
Yeah. And I think shellfish scares a lot of people. But you had a good thing recently. Kat's discovered an incredible local fish
month. Oh, yes. And I didn't even realise it was the sort of thing that still existed. And so it's sort of sadly rather gone by the wayside, because obviously we are now heavily in stew season. But every Saturday I'd go and be like, can I have some of whatever on earth that is, and how do you cook it?
Mm.
And that was amazing.
That's so great. I know. I've got a great fishmonger. Mm. But I always love it when saying, you know, what have you got in this morning that's good?
Yeah.
And that's
a
lovely way to cook it. And also, but the same as Drew's is that old-fashioned thing of asking a fishmonger or a butcher how to cook something. They will always know.
Finally, then, Kat Nigella. Okay. Is it okay to be a hoarder? Or to not like hoarders? Where are we on this one?
I will have to contemplate this question while sitting on my pile of gold.
Well, if I'm obviously hoarding all the cash, yeah. I say this because I think a year ago, I moved into my new house. And I think moving house is a very good way, isn't it, of just generally decluttering. Because the golden rule is you have to throw out a third, don't you? You move two thirds and throw out a third. Oh, Nigella's shaking her head at me on that one.
No.
I think then starting from scratch almost in a new place, it kind of encourages you then to keep a nice, clear sort of shelf space and not, you know, accumulate.
Yes.
And I'm now quite ruthless about, am I really going to use that? No, chuck it out. You know, it's helped that mindset.
You.
But
I am a terrible clutterer.
Are you?
And I moved, and I just, you know, I'm fine when I'm, you know, when everything's in store and I'm, you know, don't have my stuff, I'm fine. I could live without it. The minute I see it in a box, I can't throw it away. And I've got clothes I haven't worn for 15 years.
Oh,
I can't throw away. When I open my cupboards, I can't see what to wear because I can't even take anything out.
But is this because you love it all?
No.
Oh!
And no, so I can't wear it and I can't throw it away.
So what
and
use is
my
it?
My kitchen, none at all. I think next year I'm going to have to get one of those people who come and tell you off and make you throw things away.
They would be good, I think.
And also my kitchen clutter is too much. I love it, but I am, you know, only just yesterday added to it.
What are the most useless kitchen utensils you have?
Or that you've used once?
Well, I do give them away sometimes. I am quite good at that. I did once write a whole chapter called my Kitchen Gadget Hall of Shame. I'm forever buying, you know, a bit of nonsense. I've just bought a Japanese ginger grater over the weekend, and I have used it. Whether I use it again, I don't know, but it's not very big. But then I still got to find where to put it. And then I also find with things like I buy lots of, you know, I have things that I leave on the counter for too long, so many bottles of oil and this and that, and then I have to clean it, and I feel this kitchen surface is
you've gone counter blind, because it's what happens.
It's
my other theory, because I have friends who do this and they are terrible. They'll put something in, they'll push something to a corner. And then they go, oh, I must move that. I'll move that tomorrow. And then they don't do it.
And then it lives there permanently.
And then suddenly they've just got a brown box living in the middle of their...
I know.
And they go blind to it. And
no.
I'm like, why...
Oh, God, you've looked at my house.
But it's... And that's why I'm now very much... I've embraced this attitude. Right, you have to deal with it right now.
Yes, but I don't know how to do the mid... I don't know how to be sensible. So I feel, just get rid of everything.
Everything, all or
do
nothing,
you know what?
Yeah.
Just get rid of everything. And so I almost feel... It's for what I find, I find decisions quite hard to make of that sort. I make a lot of big decisions, but I find those sorts of ones quite hard. So I almost feel like saying, I'm going to go away for a week. Can you just throw everything away while I'm there? And I probably won't even remember what was there. Yeah. Not throw it away, give it away. And that makes me feel better if when I give it to a good charity, then I feel almost it's mean to keep it then. So that's quite good to help one. But nevertheless, I don't know how to... I find the decision so difficult and I'm thinking, what happens if I regret it? Yeah. Whereas if someone just went into my wardrobe, took everything out and gave it away, it would be easier.
Because what you said is so true.
Maybe you could do it for me.
I will. I quite enjoy it now as well. But I think as well, you know, what you said about storage, anyone that's put stuff into storage, if you've been in between homes or anything, you literally forget what you've actually stored. And then when you get the box back, you're like, why did I pay good money to store this crap?
I know. And now I'm making a mess with it. I mean, the only thing, you know, I feel is I hate, you know, I think I hate getting rid of books.
Yeah.
Because every book means something in some way, and that's difficult. But, you know, you run out of space. Mm. I mean, it's, you know, my floor is dangerous.
Doubling up on bookshelves is quite handy. Literally, some of my friends have got bookcases that are 2 to 3 books deep.
Yes. But then you can never find them to get...
Yes, no, that's true. This is when one needs to have like some kind of amazing cataloguing system that I'm not even sure exists.
No, I did that once, but it doesn't really exist. You just need enormous amounts of bookshelves, which I have had, and I don't now. So consequently, you know, everything is strange piles.
I do think as well, because I sometimes feel bad. We've talked about this before on the podcast, having no hobbies. But I do genuinely think if you have no hobbies, it makes it very easier to have a less cluttered life. Because if you think of it, most hobbies will require...
I don't have hobbies and I have an incredibly cluttered life.
No, but I guess cooking is, well, I mean, well, it's a passionate way of life. But
you know, getting dressed is not a hobby.
That's true, yeah.
And in fact, I nearly always wear the same... just like we were talking about, you know, being in a rut with cooking. I'm in a black jumper and black trousers
every day.
Most of the time. Why? And then, of course, all my clothes are black. I need some sort of miner's light to be able to see what I'm getting out of the wardrobe.
It's when, yes, you get all those slips that just look absolutely identical and you're like, this could be a cape, this could be an exceptional pair of palazzo trousers, or it could be a coat. I'm going to bring in the elephant in the room who is Marie Kondo, she of the Sparks Joy.
I know.
No, honestly, I had lots and lots of stuff.
Of it,
yes, absolutely. And somebody had lent me her book, and I was just like, this woman is mad. She says hello to a cactus when she comes in and thanks her handbags and puts them away at the end of the day. But the key thing that she also did was that whole thing of literally touching things, picking them up and go, does this give me a little burst of oomph? Like you were talking about with your books. I'm exactly the same with my books, and I will probably be crushed by them one day. Mm. But just that thing, it suddenly made it so much easier.
Birthday cards. You know, I mean, the throwing out the birthday card guilt. I mean, I have to say, I've got my head around that now. I don't feel bad about it at all. They're up for maybe a few days and then they go in the recycling bin because, you know, there's just no point. When do you ever sit there and read back over? I mean, maybe, you know, sort of milestone birthdays, you might, but come on. And in a weird way, that's why I kind of then cut myself some slack about not being particularly good at sending cards. Because I just think, why am I adding somebody else's stress or guilt about then throwing out the card I've just sent them?
All right, happy birthday, Scrooge.
I know, I'm just a delight to have.
But I think that I have a compel-repel thing about Marie Kondo. And I recommended her book to several people. I've never read it very far. And in fact, I have a very messy pile and it's got that, whatever it's called. On it is
the
magical art of tidying up or something. But that thing, you know, not everything can spark joy. Some things you just need them. And that's, I don't know, and in the wrong mood. When I get so flustered having to make the decisions, that nothing will spark joy. That, not one thing.
That said, my passport sparks joy every time I see it because I'm like, oh, thank God I haven't lost it.
If you can, if you're...
We wouldn't want you to be throwing that away, anyway.
If you can still find your passport in your house, you're not that bad of a hoarder, basically. I also think you're only truly a proper grown-up, I think, if you do that thing where you actually then, you know, declutter your wardrobe every 6 months.
But I have a box of things that say... What did I find in a box which you said something like, you know... things that don't fit anywhere else. Why did I keep... So I didn't know where to put things when I was going through. I just put it in a separate box. Kept the box.
I really want to see what's in that box. I'm really intrigued, but we could basically talk about this all day, quite frankly. We could hoard all these memories, but sadly, we must draw the show to a close. It's been fabulous to have you, Nigella. Thank you so much for joining us. Do check out Nigella's amazing new book, At My Table, and her TV show. It's on BBC Two, 8:30 on Monday evenings. So do join her then. And thank you so much for joining us on Hey, It's Okay.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.